Good morning. It's Monday.
Imagine that's how
imagine
you
we did a depressing every Monday. We're like, well, here we are, Leanne and I, back to harass and torment you on a Monday morning. There are people who like that stuff, huh? There are those people who there's a restaurant somewhere in London where the waitresses were rude to you the whole time.
Oh, you pay for that.
And you pay for it. And people loved it. The place is still going strong, I think. So people go there to be abused. I mean, we had this dominatrix on last week, and look at how people love being abused. They really like being beaten and made to submit. And
I suppose maybe they feel like they deserve it.
Maybe, yeah. It's like an insecurity thing. I don't deserve to be happy.
Mm.
You know, you get those people.
I'm too happy. I deserve a beating.
Yeah, you know, you also get those people who, if things are going too well in their lives, they're like, oh, but there's something terrible coming. You know those?
Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Correct. That's no way to live. That's a horrible way to live.
No, you've just got to accept that bad things are going to happen and they're coming. Just be a realist.
Well, there we are. There's the bit of misery we needed to start our Monday morning. My producers, Flex and James, are sitting there. They're sober for a change, which is really nice.
That's amazing.
Friday they weren't. No, it was bad, hey?
Was it one of those Friday parties that you have here?
They had a little bed they made under their desks.
Was this at night or in the morning?
In the morning.
What?
Yeah. You can see, you know how you can tell like when an animal's been nesting? And they basically had made a nest under their desk. It was terrible.
Wow.
Yeah. Very embarrassing. Bad for the whole community. Anyway, we've got a busy day today. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to talk about. Don't know how your weekend went, but if you watched the Springboks in Perth, you would have had an awesome weekend. If you watched Drikus fighting, you would have had an awesome weekend. So even if you're living vicariously through our sports heroes, you had a pretty good weekend then, right? Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there were the
awesome
that Australian publication, which I don't like, called The South African.
Is that an Australian publication?
For yeah.
Oh, God, no wonder they're so cuck.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that. And I thought they were,
it's horrible. No. And their headline was that the Springboks had to be detained by security.
What?
After the win. That's the angle they took. Because, you know, there were huge celebrations in the arena afterwards.
Of course.
And so they show like the worst part and just really rag South Africa.
So I didn't know. So it's an Australian, South African expat site.
I need to check on
Australia.
What a piece of shit then.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
The Proteas wrapped up a series win against the West Indies, says JP. So I didn't even know about that. But don't worry. Have no fear, because I am not a sports expert of any kind. Luckily for you, Ben will pop in a little bit later. He's enjoying all the sports so much, he wants to be here on a Friday and on a Monday. Isn't it great?
Yep. Then you know he's enjoying it.
He is. And I think a lot of people are. So good for you if you watched. I didn't watch any of it, but then you knew that was going to be the case, right? So you know what you're dealing with me. We don't need to be resetting that clock every time. Yeah, good. Good morning from PE. South Africa rocks at the moment, says Carol Jean. Well, not PE. That's still cuck. And Dud says things went well for South Africa here in Perfontein. Yeah. So Dud's actually lives in Perth. And obviously had a very, very busy. That must have been the most exciting weekend in Perth ever. Right?
Yeah.
Probably has
easily.
To. Morning, says Polyfiller. Has anyone used the Disky WhatsApp for renewing license discs?
No, but I've tried the app for renewing license discs, and it wouldn't allow payment for some reason.
Oh.
So I still have to go to the post office. I think that's the only other way.
Well, post office is probably your best bet.
Mm.
And I mean, whoever said those words, the post office is probably your best bet.
It's all it's used for nowadays, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because I mean, most of them have shut down, right?
Yeah.
Who still goes to the post office? I've got James, you gave me some slip the other day that I have to go to the post office. I'm like, where would I even, I don't even know where that is.
I had to look on maps to find the closest one. There are only a few left, and listen, they haven't been refurbished at all.
Yes, if I go there, what if I get there and it's some crappy, like, registered letter or something?
Mm.
And I've gone all the way to that post office. It better be a fantastic gift from overseas.
Which you'll have to pay tax on.
You have to pay so much tax on that it'll cost you three times what it would have cost you if you just ordered it like here in South Africa, right? Anyway, we're suffering from a lot of success at the moment, says Sugar Shabalala. He's quite right. Very good point. We really are. Like, I feel things are on the up and up in South Africa. I've got a definite sense of optimism about things, right?
I was speaking to Sia over the weekend.
Oh, yeah?
And he said the last time... Remember that woman
Sia
on the tube?
Sia Khuleesi or Sia Sangweni?
Sangweni.
Okay, just checking.
Sia Khuleesi was in Perth.
All right.
But he said the last time that woman sang in the subway randomly...
Yes.
COVID broke out.
Oh, Jesus.
And apparently she's now come out into the media again singing something else. So Sia messaged me and said, I've got PTSD from the last time you found this woman. Something's going to happen. And I said to him, I actually feel, were my exact words. I feel like we're on the app. I can feel it in my bones.
Bonds, yeah, right in their bonds. Flex and James will never live down that drunken Friday, says Migs. Probably not, but we'll survive. Everybody has a you've got to have a rough one every now and then. Yeah, and I have no problem with staff being completely hungover or drunk, as long as they get their work done, you know?
Mm.
Don't let that be like a green card forever, but you know what I mean. Great that Ben will be on Mondays as well. No, not every Monday. You don't have to worry. He won't be here every Monday.
Just when it's particularly
sporty. Yeah, no big change. Yeah, we're not going to do any of that. All right, so besides the weekend of sport, any other fun things happening?
Well, I know you don't like to talk about the weather, but it's feeling particularly springy. I went to a padel court.
A padel court?
So I spoke to the owner of the padel court.
Okay, well, thank God. Okay, you can't just walk on there and just start playing. You have to pay someone.
No, so one of the brands that I work with is hosting an event there. So we went to scope it out. And it was hot. Like, I wished I had had sunscreen. We were drinking, iced drinks. It was actually hot. It was beautiful. But yes, apparently it is pronounced padel, not paddle.
No, it's not. Come on, who says padel?
No one says padel? It. No one says it, but that's apparently how it's pronounced.
Leanne, you know what? You could take your pronunciation. You could shove it up your ass.
Not mine.
We're not going with that. Are we going with that? No. There's no way.
And you know, of course, in America, it's something different. Pickleball.
Yeah. Is that the same thing?
Mm.
Is it really pickleball? Mm. It's the same. No, it's not.
Yes, that's what they say.
No, but pickleball is not paddle.
Padel.
It's not. God, now you got me really confused. Okay, I've never played paddle.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I'm happy to admit, because you know what you're dealing with here. I'm not going to change.
So what you know what you might really enjoy. We've created a
no,
game.
No, but I wanted to say.
Okay, go.
These idiots, the producers, they all went and played on Saturday. Yeah, it's like a team excursion. Well done for. I'm so glad you didn't invite me because you knew I wouldn't have come anyway, right? Yeah, no, good.
Of course not.
It makes me so happy. You know, I get such joy out of hearing I wasn't invited to something. I know there are people who still get very cut up about that. There are people who go like, oh, well, you know, you could have invited me. Even if I couldn't come, I'd still appreciate an invitation. I'm exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, just don't even bother inviting me. I'll be like in blissful ignorance. And then when I find out that you invited everyone except me, I'll be like, yes.
You didn't have to think up an excuse.
Yeah.
You didn't have to.
Yeah. You've been around as long as we have.
Exactly.
People don't even try.
Yeah.
So good.
But
so nice.
Yes, so we've invented
padel.
Well, no. We've put together a virtual padel experience with.
How does that work?
A VR with the headset.
Oh God! Can
no,
you imagine how
it's
uncoordinated
amazing.
That's going to be?
No, it's so much easier than the normal padel.
Why?
Well, because you...
Are you going to insist on saying padel the whole time?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Really?
I chose this morning to give it a dry run. I'm still trying to decide. No, but that's amazing. I mean, when you take those things off, when you're back in the real world...
You can't walk for about 15 minutes
because you feel a bit
stumbling all over the place
seasick.
And dizzy. It's very bad for you to have those VR headsets on for too long.
Oh, there's no proof.
Leanne, it's disorientating. I've done it once, and I've got onto this thing where you could walk through the White House or whatever.
Mm.
When I eventually took the thing off, I was like,
yeah, it's a bit weird.
For about 5 minutes, I was, you know how you get sea legs if you've been on a boat? Felt like that.
But then you could have said being on a boat is bad for you. But no, you just found your sea legs. So it's the same with these.
All right. You really are argumentative today. I don't know what's got into you. You know, everybody else is here to have fun. But no, you have to argue about how you pronounce padel and tell me that I'm wrong about the sea legs. And you really are a pain in the ass this morning. Why did you go work for the South African in Perth?
Oh, I looked them up. They're in Cape Town.
Oh, okay. Well, they're still shit. All right, so electricity works. This is according to the Kifness. The government seems to be working. Arts and sport dominating on the world stage. Is it just me, or does it feel lucky to be South African again? Yeah.
I'll take it.
Oh, good. You're not going to argue like you have the rest of the stuff this morning that we talk about. Sure. Okay, let's get into some stuff. People are very anti-paddle in the comments, eh?
Oh, right.
Patrick says paddle shit. Panel and pickleball are different, says Sharon. It's not panel, it's padel, Sharon, apparently, according to Leanne Mole, who speaks padel. Carl DeSantos says that Leanne is 100% correct. Paddle is not paddle, it's padel.
Mm.
Pickleball is a different sport. Leanne managed to be wrong and right at the same time.
I like to keep you on your toes.
Yeah. All right, very good. So, you're going to tell us about X, Twitter.
Mm.
They're shutting down their operations in Brazil. What's that all about?
So, there's been a bit of a to and fro involving Elon Musk and the way the country is run, right?
Oh, no. Did he say something about the president?
No, he didn't personally. Mm. But, so their announcement, actually...
Sure, that's a pretty rough picture. The bird being speared on the X, that's kind of hectic.
Yeah, that's what people are going with. Ending operations in Brazil, the team and the services will still be available, but the team's withdrawing completely.
Mm-hmm.
So you can still use Twitter or X in Brazil. But it's
but they're just getting rid of the local office.
Yeah, and it's probably not providing that much support.
So that's not even a big story.
I don't even know if it's a huge thing, but no, Elon Musk is basically at war with the way the country is being run. He's saying you can either follow the president or you can follow democracy. You can either, we'll either be there to support you or we won't. Because if that's how he's going to work, we're not taking a stand here at all.
I generally think that X and dictators are on opposite ends of the spectrum, right?
This is true.
I mean, if you're a dictator, you don't want people having free expression because they might not like you. And they might say that you're not the president that they want. So I don't know why anyone who is a dictator would want X around, because it's going to be like a check and balance on them. You're a dictator, you don't want X. You want X, you don't want a dictator. And if people go, "Ah, but we still want free speech, even though we want a dictatorship." No, you can't have both. They don't go together. It's like oil and water. Unless, of course, Leanne decides to argue with me, in which case I'll just give up.
So, yeah, well, there's that. I'm trying to find their official...
snug this morning, too. I mean, you really are being very testy and difficult today.
I don't know if I am.
Yes, I think you are.
I'm trying to find the original tweet, and I'm not able to find it.
That's okay. They can't see it in Brazil either.
So, yes, for the past several years, Mr. Moraes has ordered social networks to suspend hundreds of accounts and posts because they're saying that it spreads content about, you know, saying that it threatens Brazil's democracy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it's a completely political thing. And
I've never had so many, like, I don't think there's been a time, with the possible exception of just before the end of World War II, that people are rushing to defend democracy, but not actually doing anything. It's like if I hear one more person going, "We need to defend democracy," I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" Because it means nothing. In America, for example, the Democrats are always going, "We need to stand up and support and defend democracy." And you're like, "By what?" "Oh, by getting Elon Musk to sell Twitter again back to the mob." No, we're not going to do that. Okay, so what is it then? Getting rid of Trump. Trump is bad. So democracy is the opposite of Trump. So as long as we get rid of him, we're doing all democracy's work. It's just, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, like, what? Bless you.
Oh, fuck. You see, I'm defending democracy, and this is what I get for it. Oh. All right, what else have you got for us? Let's talk about this this woman.
Yes.
This is an amazing story. This woman ate laundry pods.
I thought it was part of that
Tide
stupid
pods.
Yeah.
Americans, there were American teenagers a while ago who were eating Tide pods and then wondering why they died.
Mm. So this happened by complete accident, and it's actually quite a sad story.
How the hell do you ingest a whole bunch of laundry pods?
Well, when you're 93 and have Alzheimer's.
Oh, what did she think? They were pills?
She thought they were sweets or something.
Oh,
I know.
Well, when it's your time to go, it's your time to go.
Because, and again, it's come down to this bright packaging.
Yeah.
And now a coroner has issued a warning saying this isn't the first time this has happened.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If a 90-something-year-old thinks, oh, that's a nice sweetie, and decides to eat a Tide Pod, isn't that just a short circuit to what's going to happen to her anyway in a few months?
I understand, but do you
think... Aren't you saving the family some time and trouble?
Do you think you would just, if it was your grand, would you just leave it to happen to someone else?
No, of course not. But let me ask you this. Why is it the fault of the Tide Pod or the laundry manufacturers that they've made the packaging too bright? What, your packaging is too successful. It makes people think that they are sweets. Dumb people who think they're sweets must die. No, come on, guys. Like, if you think a laundry pod is a sweet, I mean, that's like going, that's a nice knife. I wonder if it can cut my own throat. You can't help stupid. Come on. Who are we trying to save here?
So I do hear you, but they are going to...
That's like saying McDonald's is so... They make it so scrumptious and nice, and those drive-thrus are so wonderful, and the people on the drive-thru speak, hello, I did your order. Those people are so friendly and nice that I just can't help being 129,000 kilograms. Come on. A little self-responsibility, a little accountability here.
Mm.
Like, if you're very old, sure, they should keep you away from anything dangerous. It basically put you in a padded cell.
Well, I mean, those things have to be locked up anyway from children and pets and probably people and who don't
people.
Know better.
Yeah. So don't blame the manufacturers. I know what's going to happen here. People are going to try and blame the company. They're going to say, oh, well, it's this laundry pod company's fault. It's not. It's also not the fault of like kitchen designers or washing machine manufacturers or the very nice chap who sold them to me down on the street. It's not his fault either. It's actually just this old lady's fault. Mm. This happened because this old lady's clearly demented.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know what was going on, so she ate a handful of what she thought were sweets, maybe.
Yeah. I'm also wondering about the taste. Surely that should have been off-putting.
Well, the foaming in your mouth ought to be a clue that something's not right. Oh, this is very, very good sherbet.
Yeah.
Come on. What are we doing? Sorry.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Listen, keep your old people away from the laundry pods.
Or keep the pods away from the people.
Both. And happy washing. Yeah, there we are. Very good. And people are trying to do magic mushrooms, apparently, for depression. So they're trying to treat their PTSD or their depression or their anxiety. So they're doing these mushroom trips, which I think is great. You know, we've seen that many people have had tremendous results from treating themselves.
Even you were telling me of these microdosing.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about the microdosing. So I listened to an interesting podcast the other day about microdosing and
psychedelics.
They found that actually it's really like you do a placebo or you do the microdosing. It has more or less the same results measurably. This is a guy who's, he's an incredible, he's spent almost his entire adult life just studying psychedelics. He said, maybe the microdosing doesn't work, but he said those proper like hero doses that people do when they go into a spiritual experience and they do it with a, you know, someone there to kind of watch over them, and you unpack all your stuff and your brain makes new neural pathways and he said that's definitely a thing that works. And it seems to work for a lot of different people. So if you've done it before and you like it, that's great. But apparently, there are loads of people trying magic mushrooms. And this is the picture. They're accidentally finding God.
Mm.
So this was invariably going to happen after a while. So people who thought, oh, well, I'll just go on a trip and sort out my anxiety.
Mm.
Now they come back as like fully religious people.
Absolutely. Oh. They may have even gone in as fully religious. So for instance, there was one woman who went in. She'd never so much as had coffee in her life before. So she was pretty nervous, you can imagine.
Must have taken a lot of persuasion.
So her name's Stephanie Brinkerhoff. She tried the...
Oh, I know
it's
her.
Called psilocybin.
I know her, yeah. Psilocybin's the active ingredient in magic mushrooms.
So she was a Mormon mother of three, desperate for help. Migraines.
Mormon, or was there one more M there than was meant to be there?
Mormon mother.
No, moron.
Oh, I see what you mean. No. Chronic fatigue, had tried all the antidepressants, nothing was working, heard a series of podcasts about psychedelics.
There we go.
May have been the one that you heard. And then reached out for help. She, in 2021, swallowed her first dose of magic mushrooms with an alleged medicine woman she found on retreat.guru.
I don't know
if I would have gone that route.
Retreat.guru, that's where you go, huh?
She says she met God.
Huh.
She left her church, the Mormon church, found another church that she preferred. So whether you go in religious or not, you're still going to come out religious is the point. Some agnostic atheists have found God after trying these things. The funny part is that they're actually really happy now because they've got a purpose in their lives.
Yeah.
So
I know loads. Kind of works. Yeah. I know lots of very, very unhappy atheists and agnostics who, once they discover that religion is not the worst thing that could happen to them, end up being a lot happier.
Exactly. No.
Good. I'd prefer that. I'd prefer a bunch of happy religious people to a bunch of unhappy irreligious people.
Happy and harmless.
Yeah, it's taken me a long time to figure out that that's something I prefer.
Yeah. And now, so apparently there's some churches, they're signing up as churches just so that they can legally use these psychedelics and hand them out to people during their practices, their services. So those are being denied, the right to set up these churches. So it works both ways.
Oh, my God, it's Ben.
Uh-oh, it's me. Look at that. I think
you guys taking so many mushrooms. It just appeared.
Jesus, Ben just appeared like in a vision.
These mushrooms, honestly.
Like, holy shit, these mushrooms. Leanne, you have some more.
I wouldn't even know how to take them.
You've taken everything else.
Everything else, yes. Yeah.
Funny, like you started with heroin.
Worked my way onto softer things.
Leanne is like, this is so boring compared to the stuff I started when I was 13 in the South.
When did mushrooms become a thing, though?
Because God, it's such a thing
centuries
now.
Centuries ago.
I know, but I mean, okay, it's always been around, obviously. Oh. But socially, when did it become a thing like cocaine or ecstasy or... whatever else people
always
take
was in places like Amsterdam. You would you'd go to cafes and have your dope and your mushrooms.
I think that it's kind of come to prominence again recently, and I can't help thinking that, you know, people like Joe Rogan have had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, podcast bro culture.
I mean, it certainly has. It entered my life some time ago because people are also, but only in the last 5 or 6 years.
Mm.
People are always looking for answers. They're looking for shortcuts. They're looking for reasons to find meaning, purpose, importance. It doesn't make sense to just drift through life. So drink, because drink, frankly, is way worse than anything these things can do, right?
Yeah.
And yet people in this country, I mean, especially in South Africa, I think we have a problem. We don't know how to socialize if we're not drinking.
Mm.
This will lead us to people's weekend with Trikis and the Springbokke.
Sure.
Oof, wow.
We've got to get into that just now. But I don't know. Like, mushrooms are definitely a thing. I know friends of mine who I thought would never, ever do it. My one mate said to me the other day, yeah, he did it. He did mushrooms the one night. He took a whole bunch of them on his own, put on like one of those eye masks.
Mm-hmm.
Listened to some music, had this profound experience.
It's like ayahuasca, which is also becoming more and more popular.
Ayahuasca is also a big thing, yeah.
That's a bit different, and it gets a bit toilety though.
It can be a bit toilet. It doesn't always.
Doesn't always, but I mean, there's a chance.
But there are a lot of these controlled situations where you go into day clinics and are given controlled doses. Well, I mean, where you're safe and you're.
That's a really good point. Why don't spa franchises have that? Is it against the law?
No, you should be able to do it.
Look, if I'm going to get a hot stone, why can't I get a hot stone mushroom?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can have a massage while you're on a trip.
It would just, yeah.
People would go for it, I'm telling you.
Oh, completely.
No. All right, so speaking of people going for things, tell us about this weekend in sports. Because, I mean, Drikus went for it and got it.
Since I left here on Friday, it was one of the most action-packed, incredible sporting weekends
ever. Really was.
It was just... Sure. But it started with the press conference on Friday with the UFC. Now, how it works is that the UFC has to get all the hype possible to try to sell the fight on the weekend. And
that's when they both pitch up the fighters and they have words, is it?
Yeah. So there's always kind of heat and there's a bit of action the whole time. And then the press conference is the final time where the big media can ask the questions. All the narratives just get thrown into one place. And it's a bit of a dog show, really. But what I've always said about Drikus is that even though it's his second language, nobody shit talks like this guy. Nobody can get under the skin like this guy. He made his last opponent cry when he won the title. And then on Friday, Israel Adesanya looked like it was his first time fighting. This is a guy who's the most dominant middleweight champion in the modern era, and he was nowhere. Like, there was videos a while back of him sort of touching his dog's penis, which obviously is a bit is a bit out there. And this one guy was asking questions about betting, and Israel was saying, "Am I the underdog?" And Drikus is like, "Whoa, bro, no one said anything about dogs. Just relax."
Wow, that's fantastic.
And he didn't have a comeback. That's he had so nothing great. To say because Drikus had just dropped him like that. And then when he first got into the UFC, he was talking about how rich he was, how in Nigeria he had all these people who were like basically his servants. He didn't know how to bath himself until the age of 8. And he was like trying to flex so hard about what a guy he was. So then one of the reporters was asking, like, "Are you going to go back to Africa with the belt if you win?" And he's like, "Of course, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this." And then Drikus just basically said, "Are you taking your servants with you?" And straight away, this oak just cracked. He played the victim card, how his parents had to work triple jobs.
It was all bullshit.
But the more rattled he got, the more Nigerian he became. Because he's Israel Adesanya, right? This weekend it was Israel Adesanya. And he was so rattled by Drikus. This guy's a great fighter. He's one of the greatest in the UFC ever. But he was getting absolutely rattled by a second language English oak. He just sat there going, "Yeah, what about this? What about this?" So by the time it got to all the face-offs, all this kind of stuff, you could just see he was rattled. But to his credit, he looked the best he's ever looked in the octagon when he fought Drikus. He managed to get his shit together after crying because he burst into tears.
That's hilarious.
And he managed to get his shit together. But
Drikus, I mean, is that the worst thing that can happen to you?
In that kind of environment,
I think it is to cry.
So I know people nowadays, because everyone has to be so nice to each other and inclusive, it's always like, "Oh, it's okay for men to cry."
No.
Dude, don't cry before a fight.
No. You don't want a fighter to cry. I'm sorry. That's pathetic.
Get broken down by verbal warfare.
Is this like the only sport where this public display of verbal interchange happens before a game?
Well, like combat sports.
And is some of it just made up and for sure?
Of course it is, because all about pay-per-view numbers, right? That's what the UFC is based upon. It's got the, like, WWE right at the top, where it's completely staged and theatrical. And then we get boxing, which is like fragmented here and there. But it happens. It has to happen.
Yeah.
Because you have to sell fights. It's like you won't see Rusty and Sia Khaleesi coming up and talking shit about their opponents because that's rugby. Right. You have to sell rugby. Rugby happens. It's a game. Everyone knows about it. But with fights, it's individual sport. Like, no one really cared who Drikus du Plessis was about 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we've been talking about him on the show for a while now, but all fighters have to sell themselves hard. And he just happens to be the best at that as well. So he's the best. Okay,
well, awesome. What does this mean to him?
So then, I mean, obviously he's now beaten Adesanya.
Oh.
He's got the longest current active winning streak in the middleweight division. He's won 8 fights in a row now. And his loss, and coming up, people were like, "Oh, he's just fighting bums." But he's fought the best 3 dudes in the last 3 fights, and he's beaten all of them. No one has ever submitted Adesanya, ever. And Drikus did it.
Wow.
That's the way I saw it. He was going to hit him, and then he was going to finish him off with a choke. And for the first time, South Africans can be excited about a choke in sport. And everyone is just clamoring onto this as the best possible vibe. It really is just so cool. And the fact that Adesanya was so graceful afterwards by saying, like, "I'm not retiring," because now suddenly Drikus forced him to do strength and conditioning and do all these kind of things. And now he's like, "Hey, I actually like being who I am now. I'm better. I'm not as good as that guy, because he's the best.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, Drake is the absolute best. I don't think in our lifetimes we've seen a bigger, I mean, this is obviously a bold thing to say, but I don't think we've seen a bigger sporting superstar in our lifetimes in this country. That you can walk out with Evan Etzebeth and Sio Khaleesi to the octagon and they're fanboying you as hard as they did. And when he won and how they reacted.
Yes.
And how on social media, every sporting personality celebrity in this country is doing whatever they can to just praise how great this guy is.
Well, I see Tracy's comment. Joe Rogan's commentary was gold. I don't like UFC, but their reactions were fantastic. The reaction to Eben ushering Drickus out. They were relieved that Eben wasn't fighting.
There was just so much. If you watch that Joe Rogan Fight Companion, you just see four guys who are so upset because they're all massive Izzy fanboys.
Yeah.
And it's actually so lame. But this is what Drickus has done. He's taken the best of the best and he's beaten them. And he's like, guys, I was always going to do this. I keep telling you, I was always going to do this. And that kind of aura is, no, it's unseen. Phenomenal. It's unseen.
Yeah, it's a level of confidence. Look, if you fuck it up, obviously it's going to be terrible.
He does the work. So that's the whole thing, is that everyone's going to have this bravado in all kinds of sports. Like, I'm the best. This is my destiny. I dream about this. Like, how do you do it?
So it seems like Perth was the place to be, because then obviously on Saturday we had the Booker who won as well. Shitty conditions,
though. Yeah, unfortunately, like, the rain did kind of ruin that. The rain and the fact that the Aussies are such pussies just ruined that.
So what do you mean by that last bit?
that last bit that was so easy to hear. Basically, rugby is a contact sport, right? So we spoke all week about elite violence and how if you're violent and you can channel yourself and do well. In rugby, if you don't have a front two functioning props in the field, it goes to uncontested scrums. Now, what the Aussies did was like, oh, this guy's got a HIA. He might have a concussion, so they're monitoring him. For half an hour in the second half, we couldn't have scrums because these guys were going, oh, yeah, my head's sore. I can't.
Oh, my brain hurts.
So you have replacements for this reason, right? Because scrums are an integral part of the game. And what they did, they were just like, nah, this guy's not going to come back in the field. So they took out a huge factor of attack for us, the scrum, for half an hour. 30 minutes of an 80-minute match, they decided they were not going to scrum. They have thrown in the towel. They've flown the white flag. Australian rugby is an absolute disaster. And it was a pretty shitty game, but ultimately, with 10 changes, we beat them 30 points to 12. So again, one of those things we haven't done for probably ever. Go to Australia, win back-to-back test matches. We're now top of the rugby championship with 10 points. The Argentinians, who must have been so hungover from the week before was win, they got to Eden Park, and they got hammered. They got absolutely hammered. 40 points.
Yeah, that's
42-10.
That's decisive.
Now, at that ground, New Zealand have not lost in 30 years. It's 50 test matches. 50 test matches in a row that they have won. The last time they lost there, the stadium looked different. As in, it was a different place. Jeez. It's been rebuilt over the years. Nothing's the same. 30 whole years of teams rocking up there, trying their best, and going, shit, those folks were good.
Wow.
So yeah, the rugby championship's been great. It was always going to be a two-horse race. We didn't quite expect the Argentinians coming out of the blocks and beating the All Blacks. But for the next, so there's a break this week and then back-to-back weekends against New Zealand, and that'll be the decider. So we're going to fuck them up at Ellis Park, and then we're going to moor them ever so slightly more in Cape Town. But the highlight of this whole weekend of sport basically was in Drickus's camp, he's got a guy called Mark Hulme, who is in the UFC in the Ultimate Fighter reality show. So he's been tasked, I don't know who had this idea, to be his translator. So when in between rounds, you go into the corners and you'll have people from all over the world and their coaches are giving things. And so you're hearing all kinds of languages, right? So you'll have interpreters. So Mark is now the interpreter for South African Afrikaans. In the first round, he succeeds in translating Afrikaans into slower Afrikaans.
And everyone's
picking up on this. It was so funny. And then eventually, I don't know if someone jabbed him and said, no, Brie, give us the English.
What's an example?
But like whatever they were saying, like, yeah, you know, whatever. He would then just say that, but go slower. And then in the third round, in between things, now it gets to the point where the fight's getting very technical, okay? They're both tiring. Drickus and his coach have got a master plan towards these things. And basically he said, look, you've really got to fuck this soak up now. So then Mark, in all his amazing technical advice, goes, you have to Namur him. But he started with, as a technical term, he used Mur as a technical term. So if average people around the world are listening to this going, what the fuck does that mean?
You have to Namur
him. You're going to have to Mur him. That was the final line. So here I am telling people all day how professional UFC is and how it's an incredible sport of discipline and like dedication. And the killer line for the whole weekend is, you are going to have to moor him.
I love it.
And he moored him and he won.
I love that. That's excellent. All right. So, I mean, have we got anything like this for the rest of the year? Because after this weekend, I think people are like, okay, what's next? What's next?
Yeah, look, it's Rugby Championship with the home games against New Zealand are going to be the real big ones. Of course, we've got Formula One coming back this weekend, but the English Premier League started. And Man United fans like Sandile Shangas was so excited for being on top of the league for 10 hours, maybe 11. They got a sketchy late win against, I don't know, Fulham. And he was so stoked. Liverpool won, Arsenal won, Man City won. They all won by 2 goals. So,
sorry, to go back quickly, someone brought up that Dana White has promised he'd bring a fight to South Africa.
He has, but Dana's quite big talk with these things. I've been saying it, and I don't want to say it too much because it sounds pessimistic, but I can't see the UFC bringing a event to Africa because it makes no financial sense for them. So I saw Gaten McKenzie talking about how they're in talks with the UFC, but it might be at a stage they might need to build an arena. Or what's the capacity for Sun Square in Pretoria?
It's quite big. I think you could get a couple of thousand people.
How many are there? Like,
I don't know. I mean, five, when I work 10, for Sun International, 20, suddenly
you've been there.
Yeah, must I tit feed your baby as well? And what do I know about the capacity? Just look that up for us, James. Look it up, because I meant to know. Ben wants me to just like pull that figure out.
Isn't Saul Kuzner your godfather?
Yeah, sure. Saul Kuzner's dead. Leave him alone.
I just thought there'd be a moment for you to shine there, Gareth. If I look at me, I'm just...
I'd say probably about 3,000.
Well, that's not enough.
How much do you need?
You need at least 15 to 17,000.
My God.
See, now we've had exchange. 8,000. It's not big enough, unfortunately, guys. So they need to have us. And even if it comes here, it's going to cost like 10 grand a ticket to go watch a fight. And another thing about this is that Drickus's next fights can't now wait for 18 months while they get logistics around here.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be the bearer of bad news on a Monday, but it's not because like it's going to happen in September or October, November. It's going to be a long time until they put this together. But the whole thing was people wanted to see Adesanya versus Drickus as a fight.
Someone says, what about Loftus?
They don't do stadiums. The UFC just does not do stadiums for good reason. I mean, like a guy asked the question to this dude and he said, you know, in Perth, we've got these beautiful stadiums. And they said, did you go to the rugby yesterday? We're pissed down, obviously. So they can't have that. They can't take that chance. And even if you have it in winter in Joburg, where it doesn't rain, they don't do stadiums. They want an intimate experience where you don't have to stare at screens the whole time. You can still see fighters. That's why it's an arena production. It's not like the WWE or boxing. They have a certain way of doing things at the UFC. They're very good at it. So let's build an arena that has 15,000 people.
Well, we used to have the Dome. That could hold 15,000, but now it's a showroom
kick
for
all
cars.
Those cars out. I always thought when I was a kid in Cape Town, I went to go watch WWE at the Good Hope Center.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was a big enough arena. I'm sure they could have done, I don't know what it is now.
It's probably a homeless shelter. Yeah. I don't know.
But I mean, look, we can all keep holding thumbs for this. It's going to happen. There's enough all of a demand, there's enough of an audience. It's just going to be hugely expensive. So while all this takes place, just start saving because it's going to be, I don't know, 10 times more expensive than watching the box.
Or
it'll be at least 8 times more expensive than watching the box. And we can't moan about that because that's what the product is.
Sure.
That's what these guys do. They make millions.
Okay.
And you have to pay. That's just what it comes down to.
I like it. Anything else that you need us to know?
No, that really was just the most amazing sporting weekend. It was fun. And just judging by what we saw on social media, people are so invested in MMA now, which is great.
Good.
And I feel great about this. The fact that there's more sports in the whole menu of things that people get excited about. And when you get excited on the weekends about sports, people hang out more, they interact more.
I know it's good because Ben messages me on a Sunday and is like, should we talk about sport tomorrow? I go, yeah, let's, because this is a good reason.
People go to work on a Monday, they'll be like, yes, let's watch the fights. Even if they weren't into it,
sure.
Everybody watched the fight this time. Yeah. And everyone wants to talk about it. Even Cyril's tweeting about it.
I mean, even in a shit place like Perth, it could hardly change things, right?
This big double hitter.
No, very, very good. All right, Ben, thank you very much.
All right, guys, hope you have a prosperous week.
Have a prosperous week. We'll see you at the end of it.
We'll see you on Thursday on the Bounce Show from 4 p.m.
Very good. All right. Loads of good stuff to talk about and to get stuck into. We've got Dr. Hanan joining us in just a moment or two. Of course, every Monday we get to do a little bit of a health check, a mental health check on ourselves. And of course, that little bit of sport is brought to you by Superbets. They support responsible gambling, strictly 9 under 18s. Winners know when to stop. South Africa's Responsible Gambling Foundation's toll-free counseling hotline, 0800 006 008.
Very good.
Very good. Very, very good. Should we go to Dr. Hanan?
Yes.
He's not on yet.
He's not ready. Okay. He needs to mentally prepare for what's about to hit him.
Yeah, right. Dr. Hanan has to get ready for us. It's not the other way around. All right, take a look at this quickly. There are robo-taxis. Okay, I don't know if I'd ever be comfortable with this, but then I'm sure there are people who said, I don't know if I want some anonymous driver picking me up and taking me from X to Y.
But there are taxis and then there are taxis if you're talking about South Africa.
Okay, well, these are robo-taxis. So in San Francisco, there are a lot of complaints about the constant hooting of their autonomous cars. The cars are programmed to beep whenever another car reversed close to them, causing disturbance in the neighborhood. Residents expressed frustration and even live streamed the car on YouTube, garnering significant attention. Take a look at this and you tell me if this is irritating. Right. So what I understand from that is that none of those cars actually have drivers.
And they look like they don't have drivers.
Yeah. It's disorganized chaos, right?
Sure. No, that hooting. I mean, we get our South African taxis hoot like that all the time, even worse.
Yeah.
So I think
I sometimes wonder when I'm like on Catherine Street here in Sandton, I'm always like, beep, and what did I do? But it's not. They're actually hooting for a passenger on the side of the road.
To each other.
Yeah, someone else.
In fact, on my drive to work, there's often a full-on conversation happening with the taxi driver at the front with the guy at the back in his taxi, out the window with the arm out, which is usually quite entertaining. But that hooting, I mean,
it's very annoying.
It's annoying. It's worse here by real drivers.
Look, I think it's worse if it's in a residential area and it's happening at, you know, 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. That's obviously a lot worse. But then, I mean, San Francisco is such a shit place anyway. Really, I mean, all the hypodermic needles, the human shit, the robo-taxis. And the hugely expensive property prices. I mean, San Francisco is probably the most expensive city in America to live. And you have to put up with all of this. Just get out of San Francisco. That's what I would say. I'm not so sure about these robo-taxis. I still like that there's a human, even if it's a human who fails occasionally. Am I right? There's a little bit more testing that needs doing. I have no doubt that these things will eventually be perfect. They'll be able to tell what other, you know, drivers or non-drivers in other vehicles that are autonomous or not are up to. I have no doubt that it'll end up probably being safer, but not now.
There's also
I'm not in a hurry.
There's a very specific way to drive in Joburg in particular.
It's called evasive driving in Joburg. That's what it is.
The rules of the road aren't followed.
Not in Joburg.
So if you're at a red traffic light, you'll still have taxis going through it on the left.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would trust a robot. You need to know how to drive like a South African.
Well, yeah.
Unless that's programmed somehow.
No, that's exactly right. And South Africa's got, I mean, we're not on the level of Cairo or Lagos yet. Because those places, you make it up as you go. It's like, whoa, okay.
No lanes.
Like every day it's like being in a military vehicle. in a war zone. You're dodging other cars. You're trying to figure out new ways around things. I don't know how people do it in those countries, but we're not that far off. I think South Africans are pretty damn good on the road. I mean, also, you have to pay attention here because anything could happen anytime. So keep your eyes peeled. Keep them peeled. And also, try not to use robo-taxis in San Francisco. You're adding to the problem. Okay, let's get Dr. Hanan on here, and let's check out what he has to say to us this morning. It's always good to check in with our own resident shrink. And he's a very, very busy man, but he manages to make a couple of minutes available for us on a Monday morning. And that's why we've got Dr. Hanan ready for us today. Hey, Doc, how are you? Okay. Remember, I run the show, so I have to call the shots. You know that. You know how that works, James? Yeah, all right. I preferred you when you were drunk. Drunk James was much easier to work with. In fact, from now on, we're going to start your day with a shot of straw rum. At like
I'm
6
sure you prescribed once that I had to drink. You were going to put it in my contract.
I think I did put that in your contract. Yeah. All right. Well, here's the question for Dr. Hanan. Because I think this is an interesting question that's come up in the workplace. How do you stand up for yourself and develop your own sense of confidence? And it could have a lot to do with not the workplace. It could be in your relationships. It could be in your family. It could be with your friends. Standing up for yourself is hard.
Yeah, and you get some people who it just may not come naturally to.
No.
Either they've been told in the
past. It's a personality thing.
Yes. Yeah. Either they've been told in the past that, you know, oh, well, you know, Cheryl, she's not the type to stand up on a stage and be confident.
Yes,
and
that's Cheryl. I know that. Cheryl, yeah.
Shy Cheryl, remember
Shy
her?
Shy Cheryl, yeah. You know, she's never really come out of her shell.
No.
Cheryl's shell is a real problem.
Yeah.
So, is he there now? Oh, my God. Okay, I'll show you what happens on the show if James is in charge and the way James sees the show going. Okay, he's not there, so that'll
happen. Have you tried calling him?
That'll happen in like five minutes of that, just me sitting there. That's how the show will go. Watch. This is how it'll go. Watch. Like that. Don't fear, because George Meany is here in person, and he will be joining us after.
Very good.
After 7 o'clock. Okay, Doc, are you there?
I'm here.
Was that James's fault? Tell us the truth.
Obs.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, there we go. Thank you. That's all I needed now, and I have enough ammunition to haul him in for a meeting after this. All right, so Dr. Hanan, we were talking about James the other day, and we said, there are a lot of people in the world who have something to say, but they don't always stand up for themselves. And there are lots of other people in relationships and families and groups of friends in the workplace who they have something to say, but they always kind of get drowned out, or it sounds to them like it's not their place to say something. And so they end up being, you know, pushed around, which is not good. How do you develop the confidence to be able to stand up for yourself in a work situation or anywhere else?
So there are two factors here. The first one is you've got to learn to play the social game. Every relationship is a game. And the truth is, in some settings, standing up for yourself in inverted commas could be detrimental to you pursuing and progressing in the game. So you get bosses that don't like to be told what to do or don't like to hear your opinion. They're narcissistic, they care about their own voice, and they actually only care about people enabling and agreeing with them. And if you don't read the room well, then you might be standing up for yourself or setting boundaries or letting the powers, whoever the powers that might be, know where you stand, and they might actually punish you for not reading the room well. So the real trick is to learn to play the social game, read the room, know who the players are, know what their intention is, and know what your intention is. Do you want to grow in the company? Do you want to stay where you are? Sometimes sitting under the radar is the right approach. So you got to read the room. But having said that, what must always be true, and I teach this to my kids, I teach this to my patients, when I say, and I live by the following principle, clarity over agreement, clarity over agreement. I'd rather be clear with you in terms of my position and what I mean and what I want than us agreeing and avoiding conflict for now, but kicking the can down the road because, you know, the can always becomes a barrel down the line. So I'd rather you know exactly where I stand. We can disagree. We can negotiate. We don't have to agree. We don't have to come to a conclusion where we compromise or agree on a position, but at least I know exactly where you stand and you know exactly where I stand, because that avoids the conflict in the long run. So to answer your initial question, how do you build the confidence? First thing is clarity, know what you want. Yeah. And second of all, learn to read the room. Learn to read who the players are, learn to read the rules of the game and play according to the rules. You know the golden rule, which is whoever's got the gold makes the rules. It's not your rules. It's whoever makes the rules, and you got to play to those.
All right. Well, I mean, that's very, very helpful. But all of us, not even, you know, people assume if you're a confident kind of person that you're always ready to stand up for yourself and fight and argue. And I mean, I have days where I just go, some days you don't feel like fighting. Yeah. So it happens to everybody. You've got to choose your battles. You can't fight with everybody about everything, because that exhausts you and them. And then they don't want to work with you. You said it's a game. You've got to be able to play the game. And nobody wants to play with bullies, but also nobody wants to play with complete walkovers.
Yeah. Well, again, different relationship requires you to be different. Let's call it, have a different character, a different temperament. One of the biggest fallacies when it comes to psychology is, you know, the whole notion of just being yourself. Yeah. And I have an issue with that, because what does it mean? Being yourself is like turning to a chameleon and saying, just be green. And by telling a chameleon to just be green, you're taking the essence away from a chameleon. Gareth, if you had to see me with my wife, you'd see a certain version of me. If you had to see with my friends, you'd see a different version of me. If you had to see me with my patients, you'd see a different version of me. And who is the real me? Well, the real me is all of that. All of that, I'm just adapting to the environment that I'm in.
What does that say about consistency, though? Because I've often, you know, been criticized. I can be very flippant and silly and not take anything seriously. And Leanne can be telling me about, like, her dad is going through some serious health problems. And I can be like, ha, 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 but, you know, cyclists, whatever. Mm. And then she's like, okay, today is just not the right day to actually have a real conversation with you. You're not going to get anything good out of me. Other days I'll be like, shit, I'm really sorry. Like, tell me about your dad, you know? Mm. And I'll mean both. And I can,
exactly.
I am both.
Exactly.
But I'm not exactly consistent. So what does that mean?
No, it's not true. I mean, like, yes, you are. I'd rather call it you're adapting to the situation. You would be completely dysfunctional if you were one way with everybody. So you've got the ability to be, let's call it, silly and joking and make light of a situation when it calls for it. And in other situations, you have the ability to be serious and deep and in depth when the situation calls for it. Again, the question is, what does the situation call for? So if you are able to build relationships and reach a mutual goal with whoever you're playing the game with, that means you're adapting. The ability to adapt is an incredibly important skill in the social network or the social life, because we play with other people. We play with other players. You know, I have friends who mentioned to me the other day that their child's therapist told them that the child is an issue because the child is a people pleaser. And they asked for my opinion. And I said, I don't see that as a bad thing. You know, children need to learn to please other children.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, children that don't learn to play these games will later on, they become criminals and dysfunctional adults. They become an issue. You've got to learn to play the social game.
Right. Yeah, I think that's such an important thing. And also, I mean, listen, what are you doing sending your child to a therapist so they can be told they're a people pleaser? How about just being a child for a little bit first, huh? I mean, do these people have real problems, or is this a usual thing? Is everybody sending their children off to therapists at this age?
Yeah, unfortunately, parents don't always know what to do with their children and how to manage their children, you know? So they send them to you know, orphanage. Professionals that help them manage it, but yeah, orphanage. An orphanage.
I mean, listen, I'm not saying that I would send a child to an orphanage, but if it was, I thought about, hey, Doc, what do you think of this? I was thinking I could have three or four different kids with three or four different women. And then every year we have an Olympics and the children compete and we keep the one who wins and the others go to the orphanage. Do you think
get
that's
another
a,
one?
Do you think that's good parenting?
I got to refer to the textbook for that one.
I mean, you definitely get the best, right?
Yeah, after 10 years, you'd get the best for sure.
Yeah. I mean, over time, that's the way to work out whether your child is the one that you want to keep or not. tell me, when it comes to this confidence thing, how does it appear that some people just have bucket loads of it and the rest of us have to learn to have it? We have to learn to be comfortable with being confident and putting our best foot forward and standing up for ourselves. Why does it look so easy in the case of some people and others it's much harder?
Yeah, you know, so I'll tell you a quick story. One thing that is common for everybody, irrespective of where you are in life, is that we all struggle at certain points with self-doubt and imposter syndrome. That happens to everybody. I was listening to a podcast, and the biographer of Elon Musk was asked, what motivates Elon Musk? And the biographer says, the fear of not having enough. And I thought, that's brilliant, because the guy that can literally buy the world seven times over has the same fear that every single other person should have on earth. That's what drives us. That's what motivates us. So the reality is that nobody's confident full stop. It doesn't exist. Even if you take the top basketball players or the top athletes in a particular field, they're not confident all the time. They struggle with self-doubt at certain times. What we see are snapshots of their lives when they're scoring goals or winning shots or scoring, I don't know, points or whatever it is. And we think, oh my God, they're so confident. But did you hear the Roger Federer speech that he did at some graduation? Yes. Did you listen to it?
Yeah.
Amazing. In London, and the part that's really amazing, where he says he's won 80% of these matches, but he's only won like 51% of the points that he's played. And I thought that's genius, because to be a champion, you don't have to win everything all the time. And do you think when he lost 49% of those points, he felt confident? He felt happy? He felt secure? No. Not at all. But confidence is not about the way that you feel. Confidence is, am I able to lose 49% of my points and still get up and continue trying and fighting forward? That is confidence. So we don't see the way that they feel, because everybody struggles at some point with self-doubt and imposter syndrome and the fear of not having enough. But it's the confident people that still get up in the morning, make their bed, and continue moving forward.
Damn right. What a place to end that. Very motivational. I love it. Dr. Hanan, always good to see you. We will catch up with you in a week's
time.
Great
to see you guys.
And have a good Monday and a good week. All right, we'll be back with George, who's come to visit us, which is always lekker. Means we can talk a whole lot of nonsense with George. I don't know why he does it, because it's very bad for his reputation, but it's great for us.
It's a big risk.
It's great for us because we get to have time with George, which is awesome. It's always worthwhile. So that's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. This is the Gareth Cliff Show on The Real Network. We are live on a Monday morning.